Thank you, Your Honor. I am John G. Nelson, Carter Bar, 19907, here on behalf of the appellant, Kim Ziwak, in this case. And I would like to thank the court for allowing us to address you with regard to this very important matter. The basic facts in this case are very simple. In 2006, my client, Kim Ziwak, pled guilty to what subsequently was defined as a prostitution-related offense in Arapahoe County. In 2008, the Colorado General Assembly then enacted the Massage Therapy Practices Act, CRS Section 12-35.5101 at SEC, which regulated the practice of massage therapy for the first time. Then in 2010, the state denied Ms. Ziwak's application for registration as a massage therapist. Importantly for this case, it is undisputed that this application was denied solely because of the fact of Ms. Ziwak's 2006 guilty plea. This fact is noted both in the letter of denial from the program administrator, Mr. Pritchard, which is in the record, as well as in the initial decision issued by the administrative law judge.
Were there any findings made with regard to rehabilitation in this case?
The issue of rehabilitation arose subsequently in the case. It was not raised as an issue in the notice of charges, the initial administrative document. So we, of course, had no notice that that was even going to be raised as an issue until later. There was a finding that, in discussion of that Ms. Ziwak had not proven rehabilitation. And we would argue that is irrelevant for a number of reasons, both because it was not raised in the notice of charges, which must give the applicant notice of the matters to be raised, as well as under the specific legal issues that we have raised, that is not an issue. Both under the Ex-Offenders Rights Act, as well as under the prohibition on retrospective or statute to retrospective in their operation, Colorado Constitution.
But what about the question of discretion with respect to an application?
There is a certain amount of discretion, certainly, with regard to any application. However, that discretion is restrained by various sources of law, including in this case the Ex-Offenders Rights Act.
Well, but my question ties into the discretion with respect to a fact of no rehabilitation. Does the director have discretion to deny on that basis?
We would assert that under the Massage Therapy Practices Act, as it interacts with the Ex-Offenders Rights Act, the director does not have such discretion. The Ex-Offenders Rights Act sets forth, of course, a very clear prohibition on denying a person an application or a license solely because they have a covered conviction.
That's where I'm going, because if I don't see conviction as carrying the day as rehabilitation carrying the day. And I think those are different concepts, aren't they?
Well, the Ex-Offenders Rights Act itself does not say or does not include rehabilitation as an exception to the language of the statute. In other words, it does not say that the applicant may not be denied a license because of a covered conviction, unless the director deems the person to not be rehabilitated, which of course would be an enormous exception to the operation of that statute, and would effectively eliminate the protection of the Ex-Offenders Rights Act, as if the director deems a person to be rehabilitated, in other words, there's no problem with this person getting a license, they're in all likely going to get that license application approved anyway. The Ex-Offenders Rights Act would be irrelevant.
Your client have an opportunity to show rehabilitation?
There was a hearing. The parties certainly can present any evidence they considered relevant. We did not consider it relevant because, number one, it was not raised as an issue in the notice of the denial of the application provided to the applicant. Number two, we believe it is not relevant under the Ex-Offenders Rights Act and certainly under the Colorado Constitution as well.
What about the provision in the Ex-Offenders Rights Act that says the intent of the act is to expand employment opportunities for persons who, notwithstanding the fact of conviction, have been rehabilitated.
Well, it does say that is the intention of the act. That language does not purport to impose a limitation on the operation of the act, certainly. And if the legislature had wanted to say that the fact that a person who is deemed to be been rehabilitated shall not restrict them via license, the legislature certainly could have said so. The legislature is presumed to know what it's doing when it drafts a statute. So that is, by its own terms, is not a limitation on the scope of the protection granted by the act, or on the plain language of that protection. I would also note that although there was a recent decision of this court in a pharmacy case, I believe, a different panel of this court, of course, where the court ruled that the applicant could be denied based on this sort of broad-ranging review of rehabilitation. That was based upon the statute which authorized or required the regulatory agency to make a finding of good character, basically. And the rehabilitation issue was relevant to that aspect of it. There's no such requirement in this case, no such general requirement of character for a massage therapist, and certainly it was not alleged when the application was initially denied that my client denied would lack character. It was simply she pled guilty in 2006.
But your opinion, or in the position that you're taking, what would have had to be added to the notice of charges? Was it notice of charges? I don't recall now what the title was. Notice of charges or notice of denial or whatever it is.
Yes.
What would have had to be added other than you've been previously convicted of a prostitution-related offense?
A statement to the effect that it has been determined that you lack, that you have not been sufficiently rehabilitated from this, and that is a separate grounds for denial.
Let me ask you this, counsel. Is this court limited in its review to the specific findings of the ALJ, or is it free to review the entire record below?
I believe you are free to review the entire record below. The issues we have sought to raise, we have of course sought to focus those on strictly legal questions because of the standard of review that applies to those. So that would be, with respect to the Ex-Offenders Rights Act, that would be our position, is that rehabilitation, or whether or not the government deems the person to have been rehabilitated, is not an exception to the rights granted under that act, and certainly does not apply in this case. There are several other provisions regarding the alleged overriding of the Ex-Offenders Rights Act by the Massage Therapy Practices Act, which were raised by the state, and we have started to address those in our brief. So unless the court has any questions, I'd like to move on to the constitutional question, if we may as well. And that constitutional question regards Article 2, Section 11 of the Colorado Constitution, which prohibits any statute retrospective in its operation. The basic law governing this issue and this provision seems to be undisputed, in this case at least, requires the court to make a two-step inquiry. The first step is to determine whether or not the legislature intended for the statute to operate retroactively. And it requires that the legislature provide some sort of clear statement of its intent to that effect. This is actually really a question of statutory interpretation rather than constitutional law, but since it is stated as the first prong of the constitutional inquiry, of course we will address it as such. In this case, we would assert that there has been no intent shown within the scope of the Massage Therapy Practices Act. In this case, the state relies solely on the fact that the statute was written in the past tense, and we submit this is completely insufficient to carry that burden. As we know in our brief, virtually every statute conforms to the convention of writing in the past tense. Indeed, that is standard English usage. And as we know in our brief, the alternative of using the employing the future tense, or even more so the present tense, would lead to absurd results. I would also note that in our brief, since at least 1920, the Colorado Supreme Court has ruled that where the legislature does not set a specific effective date, merely by reason of its general terms, a statute is not deemed to be to operate retroactively. That's in the Bonfils case, cited in our brief. And the position that a statute is written in the past tense is relying on its general terms and no more. So we would assume that there's been no statement of intent to have the statute apply in the past tense, and that can be contrasted very readily with, for example, the statute that was an issue in the Ficarra case, which is cited in our brief, 849 P2nd at page 6, I believe, where it was very clear, and the statute, provides an illustration of what's necessary to satisfy the burden for retroactive operation. The second issue is with regard to whether the second prong of the test is whether or not the statute imposes a new disability to conditions or transactions already passed. And we would submit that if anything in this case is clear, indeed, if anything in any case it is clear, it is that the enactment of the Massage Therapy Practices Act in 2008, if interpreted to disbar Ms. Zelak from eligibility based on her 2006 guilty plea, would impose a new disability based on conditions or transactions already passed. I would note that the statement appears to rely primarily upon the prior existence of the Massage Parlor Code, CRS Section 1248.5. 101 et sec, as saying that Ms. Zelak was already prohibited or would have already been prohibited from working as a massage therapist. That is not correct. The Massage Parlor Act expressly excluded the practice of massage therapy from its scope, and that is noted in our reply brief, those citations. So it had no application in this case whatsoever. The state also cites in brief the conditions of probation attached to Ms. Zelak's guilty plea, which after Ms. Zelak was discharged, she's no longer subject to the jurisdiction of that court, and that guilty plea, the probation conditions, also had no impact on her ability to work as a massage therapist. Indeed, I would note that one of the witnesses the state called in the hearing was, I believe her name, Michelle Poniakowski, the detective who was in charge of the investigation of the 2006 case. And she did not claim that that previous conviction or the probation terms had any application in this case. And that is certainly a knowledgeable person with respect to the application of that probation. With that, I'd like to stand down and reserve at least a little bit of time, if I may. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Tanya Light, bar number 33951, and I represent the director of the Office of Massage Therapy Registration at the Department of Regulatory Affairs. Today I'm going to talk about why the director's denial of Ms. Zelak's application to be registered as a massage therapist in Colorado should be upheld by you. The real question today comes down to, can the General Assembly set forth new conditions for licensure for occupations and have those conditions go into effect on day one?
Just before you respond to the argument made by your counterpart that that the real issue procedurally is can you defend on the basis of rehabilitation if you didn't put it in the notice of charges?
Yes. The recently decided Preen case that the Court of Appeals ruling issued this summer made clear that an applicant in a licensing case bears a burden to show rehabilitation when the Ex Offenders Rights Act is being applied to a licensing decision. In the notice of grounds for denial, there's therefore no duty on the state as the one putting forth the notice of charges. There's no burden on the state to prove that the person has not been rehabilitated. The duty is on the applicant to show that she has been rehabilitated.
And what was the, what licensing board was addressed in that case?
In the Preen case, it was the Board of Pharmacy.
And don't they have in there a requirement that you have to show you're suitable or fit to practice, unlike the massage therapy board?
I would say you're correct in part, Your Honor, and incorrect in part, respectfully.
Sure.
The correct in part is that, yes, the Pharmacy Act does have a requirement of good moral condition. The Massage Therapy Practice Act has a condition of licensure of a background free of prostitution-related convictions. And I would argue that prostitution-related convictions are very similar to having to make a showing of good moral character. Let me say that a little bit better. Requiring a showing that you have a background free of prostitution-related convictions is analogous to, for the pharmacy board, having to show that you have good moral character. And so in that regards, I think Preen is on point. And since we're talking about Preen, let's look at the facts of Preen. They are directly applicable to the facts here. In Preen, Lauren Preen was a pharmacist who at one point did hold a pharmacy license. When he had that license, he used that license and he used his occupation of a pharmacist to access and to buy legally prescription pills and narcotics and drugs, and he sold them for a profit to people who did not have prescriptions, to people he should not be selling them to, including one person who was a drug addict. He was convicted of some crimes, he served some time, he had his license revoked. Later on, he applied to be a pharmacy technician, which is a precursor to becoming fully licensed as a pharmacist. The Board of Pharmacy examiners denied his license, denied his application. He appealed. There was a hearing at the Office of Administrative Courts, and the administrative law judge found that he did show rehabilitation, and therefore he should be licensed. And as you know, the Board of Pharmacy examiners agreed with the ALJ's finding that he had been rehabilitated, but disagreed that he should be licensed. And the reason is that if you look at the words of 24.5.101, it says that other underlying pertinent circumstances must also be considered. And the Board of Pharmacy Examiners considered the underlying circumstances of the fact that Mr. Preen had actually used the kind of license he was now trying to get again to commit those crimes. And for that reason, they denied his license despite the finding of rehabilitation, and this court upheld that finding. Here, we have the same situation. Ms. Zywak, as the applicant under Preen, has the burden to show rehabilitation. She never showed rehabilitation. When she filed her application with my client, she could have, and what we have seen a lot of applicants do, sent in a letter of explanation, character references, proof of classes she had taken. She did not do that. During the trial, she could have, as Mr. Preen did, put on character witnesses testifying to her rehabilitation. And she did not do that.
1 second, just to clarify, she has the burden to prove rehabilitation based on what?
Based on the Preen case, which held that when an applicant who is seeking to change the status quo, because they are seeking to change from not having a license to having a license, then they have the burden to show rehabilitation. That was one of the things the Preen case stood for. As opposed to the Bartlett case, which was a real estate case where a real estate licensee who already held a license, the real estate commission wanted to revoke his license. And in the Bartlett case, the court held that the state agency in that situation was the one trying to change the status quo, and therefore the agency bared the burden to show that Bartlett had not been rehabilitated. So there's definitely a difference based on who's trying to change the status quo.
Do you think that Ms. Ziwak had notice that she should have put on some evidence of rehabilitation?
I don't know what Ms. Ziwak knew or did not know. I do know that the notice of charges itself, I drafted them so I do know, stated that the grounds for her denial were because of her conviction of a prostitution-related offense. And one thing to note,
that doesn't say anything about rehabilitation. That says a conviction.
Correct. But one of her attorney's defense has always been, during briefings at the trial level, is that the Ex-Offenders Rights Act applies. And when you read the language of the Ex-Offenders Rights Act on its own terms, it says it applies to those persons who have been rehabilitated and are able to contribute to society. I'm quoting that last part incorrectly, but the part that I am quoting correctly is persons who have been rehabilitated. So counsel was very well aware that the words of 24-5-101 state that if you're going to apply the Ex-Offenders Rights Act, you only come under the protections of the Ex-Offenders Rights Act if you have shown rehabilitation. I believe that is notice, especially when that very statutory site had been fully briefed below at the trial. So under Preem, two things that are important for today's case, and that is, first of all, Ms. Ziwak had the burden to show rehabilitation, and she did not do so whatsoever. And then the second important holding in Preem is that agencies may consider, even with a showing of rehabilitation, which we did not have here, agencies may consider other underlying circumstances. And the other underlying circumstances here are that Ms. Ziwak used her business, her massage therapy business, to conduct a house of prostitution. That is, there's a real nexus there. And that's the word the Preem case uses, is there a nexus between the crime and what the statute is trying to regulate? And that's, there's a clear nexus in this situation as there was in Preem, and therefore this court should uphold the director's denial just as the Preem court upheld the pharmacy board's denial. And then if you do not have any other questions about the Ex-Offenders Rights Act, I can move on to the constitutional argument. Appellant argues that the Massage Therapy Practice Act is a retrospective, unconstitutional application of law. And we respectfully disagree. He said two-prong test, I say a three-prong test, but test is the same. The first prong is whether or not the General Assembly intended the act to apply to past events. And again, remember, the big question is, does the General Assembly have the authority to put forth new conditions on licensure for various occupations and have those new conditions apply on day one? Day one here was July 1, 2008. And if you follow appellant's argument, then as of the very date the statute went into effect, it couldn't apply that day. It would have to wait a certain amount of time to allow time to pass for people to be convicted of prostitution-related crimes. That was not the intent of the General Assembly. The General Assembly did not intend to grandfather in prostitutes. The whole purpose of the statutory scheme was to keep prostitution out of an industry rife with prostitution. Prostitutes often use massage therapy as a guise to conduct their profession. And notably, the DeWitt and Picara cases state that express language of retroactivity is not required. It is not required. You can look at other things. And here the other things are, you know, first of all, yes, the statute is written in the past tense. But I think the bigger picture is the whole reason that there needed to be a statewide registration scheme for massage therapists, of all people, was because of prostitution. Because if you think about it from a practical standpoint, you have a person who is naked except for a sheet in a closed door room with one other person. And if that person had a background of prostitution, there is ample opportunity in that situation for prostitution to occur again. That was the intent of the whole statute. So we contend the statute was meant to go into effect from day one. And we believe the DeWitt and Picard cases are on point, that we don't need express language. We, the General Assembly, intend that the statute apply to acts 10 years ago. The second and, as I call them, third prongs, although I agree with Mr. Nelson, they could be combined into one prong, is does the act impose a new duty, obligation, or disability? Opposing counsel did not talk about the vested rights prong. That is the third prong that the state believes is also involved in the test. He did not raise that. I will just say it is clear that a hope for a license does not amount to a vested right. So the statute in question did not impair Ms. Ziwak's vested rights. So I'll move on from there unless you have any questions. Mr. Nelson spent most of his time talking about a new disability. And before I get into why it's not a new disability to deny someone licensure because they pled guilty to a prostitution-related crime, let me start by saying, even if, for sake of argument, it is a new disability, the DeWitt case is very clear that any impairment to a new disability must be, and the DeWitt case uses the words, must be balanced against the state's police powers to regulate certain occupations in order to protect the health and safety of the public. And so that's exactly what's going on here with the General Assembly. Even if you find that there was a new disability created that impacted Ms. Ziwak negatively, you have to balance that against the police powers to regulate the massage industry to keep prostitution out of an industry that has historically been rife with prostitution. The DeWitt case goes on to say that the statute in question, when you do this balancing test, the statute in question has to have a rational relationship to its statutory goals. Here, the statute in question is 107 subsection 6, which says the director may deny an applicant if the applicant has been convicted of prostitution or any prostitution-related offense in Colorado or in any other state. The statutory goal is to keep prostitutes from having a license or a registration in this case that gives them the freedom to go out and have an opportunity to continue to commit prostitution crimes. That statute furthers that rational relationship. There is a rational relationship between that statute and what the General Assembly is trying to do. But, backing up, the statute is not a new disability. A disability connotes there was some ability Ms. Ziwak had in the past. She pled guilty to a crime. There are no abilities that connect to the crime that then later becomes a disability when the law changes. And I see I'm out of time, so I will stop unless there are any questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Nelson, you have about a minute and 22 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will do my best to address the most important points in an expeditious fashion. First of all, with regard to the question of what issues are raised, it is acknowledged that the applicant in this case has the burden of proof, the general burden of proof, to show that she meets the requirements of the statute. There are two issues on that. That does not mean that she, that's not the end of the inquiry. First of all, The statute for licensing of massage therapists does not impose any general requirement of good character or any general requirement of rehabilitation, contrary to counsel's assertions and contrary to the issues in the Preem case where there was such a requirement in the statute. Second of all, both the Colorado Administrative Procedures Act as well as due process requires that the grounds for denial be set forth in the notice of grounds for denial, and that was a document in this case. That both says this tells the applicant what the issues are to be and to improvise that notice and would firmly mislead the applicant if it were incorrect. And that certainly wasn't an issue in this case. I noticed my minute's already gone, so I would really love to continue, but I don't think I'll be able to.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And thank you both for your arguments. The matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.
Thank you.